today we have a little bit of a lighter subject than our last two. And I am really thrilled because I get to invite one of my best friends into the studio and talk to her about what it's like to grow up in the shadow of celebrity, what it's like to want to be in the same industry and have this superstar family to look up to and to live up to live in the public eye as a child, and how to navigate when there are things that happen to you in those times. So today we have Jenny Gill Van Valkenburg. I used all of her names, but Jenny Gill is a Nashville native and comes from country music royalty. Her father is Country Music Hall of Famer Vince Gill. Her mother is Sweethearts of the Rodeo's Janice Oliver. And her stepmother is Christian superstar Amy Grant, with whom she toured as a backup singer. She released her debut EP, The House of Sessions, in 2015, but since has really been honing in on something that she is very excited about, very talented in, and is really having fun. So Jenny has recently been sharing her comedic side on social media platforms and is currently writing and developing content for future TV and film projects. I hope that you enjoy our conversation today and garner what it's like to live in the shadow. Welcome to our third episode of The Good Enough Woman. Today, I have Jenny Gill Van Valkenburg.
Corrine, thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. I'm so glad you're here.
Can I just tell you how cool I think this is, that you had an idea and you had the guts to do it?
That's what we do all the time, right? How many years ago, though, did I tell you about this? I remember specifically calling you in the car maybe 3 years ago,
two years, 3 years ago.
And you're like, you sound so excited about it. But I just couldn't get the gumption, or I don't know. I was just nervous. I'm actually more nervous today to have you on than I was my other two guests, but I'll tell you why. Because you're one of my best friends.
We are very close.
I know. But I want people to understand how amazing you are. And you
can't make me cry. Like,
you might.
Out of the
I'm
gate
like the
here.
Barbara Walters of, I'm just kidding. I'm not at all. You know, I'll go with it. So I want to introduce you as a person who I find to be extremely creative, a person who doesn't seem to be afraid of any of the choices that you make, and you live out loud. And I knew you were going to give me that look.
Wow.
Because I know through many of our conversations through our life, that's not how you feel.
Well, it's definitely not how I see myself.
Right.
Why is that?
Let's dive right in.
Let's get into it.
This is going to be ridiculous.
It's going to be fun.
But it is.
It's going to be amazing.
Let's go all the way back to your childhood. And I want you to tell me where you were born and how you came to be.
My mom and my dad, see, they went on a trip, you see.
They did a thing.
And then I showed up 9 months later. I was born in Torrance, California, which is in Southern California. We weren't there very long. Both my parents are musicians and singers. And so they had decided to make the move to Nashville, Tennessee to follow their musical dreams. And my mom was the first one to see some real success that turned into paychecks that could support the family. And I remember in my earlier years, it was my mom who was traveling a lot, and dad would take me with him to the golf course. And that's where I learned how to drive. He'd let me drive the golf carts so that I wouldn't get too bored out there.
Yeah.
I mean, a five-year-old on the golf course, if you're not playing the game, I can get really boring really quickly.
Yes, absolutely. You know what I used to do too when I was little? I lived in the mountains, but we lived kind of by a golf course. And my brothers and I, it was in the mountains, so there were creeks and hills, and we would go to the golf course and we would walk through the creeks and we would walk through the like hills and stuff, and we'd find all the golf balls.
Nice.
We'd go onto the greens and we'd clean the golf balls, and then we'd approach people. You guys want to buy some golf balls?
Now that is That's where
I'm sure that was my. I'm sure that was my middle brother. I'm sure it was. But I went along. It was like, hey, let's bring Corrine because she'll be like, hey, let me bat my eyes.
Because you're so charming.
Yeah, I don't think I've thought about that in forever. But yes, we used to do that all the time.
I forgot about those little ball cleaning machines.
They were so fun.
It was so fun.
I could sit there for hours. I'd be like, no, let me wash them. Anyway. Okay, so you would go to the golf course.
Yeah, and I would wash my dad's golf balls. Oh, and then I think I was around, what year was it? 90. So I was about 8 years old. 1990 is when my dad's career really took off. And it just kind of changed the trajectory of all of our lives. And I didn't really understand at first what was happening, but I just noticed a difference. I stood out somehow, but I didn't really understand why.
And then, like, were people recognizing you, or they were just recognizing your family? And so you felt the attention.
I felt the attention, but it was, I think, in the beginning, more of a curiosity. People would ask me a lot of questions about my dad. And, you know, at first it was kind of cool. I was getting some attention. It was the first thing in my life that I felt made me interesting was my association with my dad and his accomplishments. And that was the first thing that made me stand out. And I was proud. I thought it was the coolest thing. And then fast forward to around middle school, and it was not such a great thing. It became, I think, an easy target for bullies to use. Just awful, awful, awful rumors.
Well, think about
rumors.
Social media now. If we do that now, back then there was no social media.
Thank
and it went
the Lord.
Straight to your face.
It did. Or it was within earshot.
Yeah.
Or it was written on a wall.
Yeah.
In the bathroom, you know, all kinds of stuff. Rumors. And it was a pretty dark period.
And for those that don't know who your parents are, we probably should just say that right
out loud. It's probably a good time. Yeah. My dad, his name is Vince Gill. And my mom's name is Janice Oliver. She changed her name back to her maiden name. And she's one half of the Sweethearts of the Rodeo. So if you were a country music listener back in the late 80s, early 90s, then you would definitely recognize both of those names.
Yes. And then she would sing with her sister.
Yeah, her sister, yeah. Christine and her. They had a duo and they were doing their thing right alongside the Judds. The Judds were very popular at that time.
Right.
And I remember as a little kid, I didn't like the Judds because they won all the awards. Duo of the year, you know, every time went to the Judds. My mom never got a CMA award, you know, so... There's a funny story of I remember a gentleman, I was at a gig of some kind that dad was playing, and there was a musician touring with him maybe, and he was interacting with me we were playing a video game on a bus. It was like Super Mario Brothers or something. And I'm playing this video game and this guy, his name is Tony King. He sings on the Grand Ole Opry from time to time. And I'm a kid. And he says, wow, you like this game? And I said, yeah, I can't get past this level. And he said, you know, my girlfriend, she can get to level 9 or whatever the best level was. And I said, oh, who's your girlfriend? And he said, Wynonna Judd. And I went, ugh, I hate the Judds, right to his face. Just no, you know, the innocence of a child. No idea that I've just said something very offensive. And every time I see him, we laugh about that. You know, my mom and Christine, there was work available. They could have kept touring if they wanted to, but they made the decision to get off the road and stay home with their babies. I'm so glad she did.
Yeah, because your cousin is around the same age as you.
Yeah, me and my cousin were about 9 months apart. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of grew up together almost like sisters. I was an only child. My cousin did have a younger sister, but I spent a lot of time with them as kids. And just a lot of my early memories was me and my mom and my cousins and Aunt Christine, and Dad was doing his thing on the road. I'd occasionally get to go on the road with him in the summers. If he'd play a state fair, you know, he'd bring me out with him because there's fun stuff to do for kids.
Yeah. Go see the pigs.
And yeah. And, you know, through the years of doing that, I noticed people would take interest in me, sort of, but it was more of a, you know, what's it like?
Interest in you to find out what insight you could give them about him.
Yeah.
And not about you.
Correct. It was, what is he like at home? What's the behind the scenes situation? We'd have people knocking on our door, asking for paper towels out of our kitchen. Like, it got weird for a minute and I didn't know what was happening.
And is this about the time that he started hosting the CMA Awards? Because
yeah.
That I feel is maybe the height of his time.
Yeah, I'm going to say anywhere in the mid into the later 90s, he was hosting the CMA Awards. He won Entertainer of the Year. I don't know how many times, but I think more than once. Male Vocalist of the Year several times. I mean, he had a really good run. And now is still regarded as, you know, just a Nashville treasure.
He went out with the Eagles. You
he's
know,
working with the Eagles, for crying out loud. He's been doing that for 7 years now, which is wild to me. But he still maintains, I think, a really deep love for country music. I think Nashville has kind of labeled him as an ambassador of country music. And I mean, and he holds those traditions really dear. And it's really cool to watch somebody you love so much have all their dreams come true. And so many cool things and a lot of pride. But there's a lot of dark stuff that comes with that too. And just your own ego.
Yeah. I remember dating somebody who you played, and I would watch him play and think to myself, oh my gosh, he loves playing so much. Will he ever look at me the way he looks at that piece of equipment?
Oh my gosh.
And it's weird because it was inspiring, because I thought to myself, I want to love something that much.
Yeah.
I want to feel that too. But in the end, I really want someone to feel that about me.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably the hardest part about somebody who is passionate or really great at what they do, is finding that space in there for you. And I feel like I've seen you working through that for years, even now.
Oh yeah, it's definitely a journey. I'm still dealing with just so many, I mean, I wouldn't call them traumas. It's just, I've had a unique upbringing in how people, how they approach me, how I think they view me. I spent a lot of my life feeling invisible and just not seen, not understood. And
I think you're the person who really made me understand what the shadow of celebrity felt like.
Yeah.
Because you yourself are very creative. You have an amazing voice, and you are, we'll talk about this a little later, but in your new endeavors with film, you can see it. You also have a brilliance about you, but to find yourself beyond that path in that shadow of your parents, to say, I too am really good at this, but you get overlooked. I think there was somebody told me one time that, and I think that it comes from this, but greatness skips a generation or something like that. I don't think that's true. I heard that and I thought, oh, that's interesting. But what I think it is that there's greatness in that next generation. It just gets overlooked because it's overshadowed.
Yeah. I've used that word is so meaningful to me. I mean, I wrote a whole song trying to explain what that kind of feels like. I never play it though. I never played it. I don't know why. Live. I recorded it and
did
I released
you not
it.
Play it though at a show with your dad once.
Did I?
I think you did.
Well,
because
I don't remember.
I think you came out, and we'll have to look back, but I think that maybe it was even at the Ryman, and you came out and sang a song, and it was that song. And I thought, oh my gosh.
Maybe I did.
What a moment, because even though you may feel like your dad wasn't there as much, mm-hmm. and he probably has realized, I can't fix that. But for him to ask you to play it at his show and to recognize its importance to you gave it a voice beyond yours. I thought that was really cool. I don't know if that's what that was, but I remember thinking to myself, this is a moment. I'm watching her have a moment for herself and for her family that is recognition.
Yeah. Dad was really, Dad, I think, has always been good about that. And I think I've heard him say, I realize I've taken up a lot of space in your life. So he knows. And so
he can't do anything about it necessarily if he's going to continue.
He can't change it now, but he, I think, does a really great job of sharing his spotlight. And not just with me, but with so many others who come through Nashville who are trying to get noticed, to, you know, he did the same things and needed people to give him opportunities. And now he's in a position to offer that to others. And I think he does a really good job of that. And he's never pushed me to do it.
Mm-hmm.
He always gave me space to do it if I wanted to.
Yeah.
So if I asked, hey, can I sing a song at your show? Absolutely. You know, but he's not gonna suggest it.
Right.
You know, it's gotta be your idea. And what you said before about wishing you had the same kind of passion for something that you see somebody else displaying, I totally relate to that, because I'm good at music. I would have been better had I put more practice hours in, but there was a fire that just wasn't there. And I don't know why. I've spent a lot of time, why wasn't I more motivated?
But do you think it's because you saw what it takes?
Maybe
you were having a family of your own at that point, and you were
even before I had kids. No, it was before I had kids. It was after I had my son that any kind of a fire, I think, was lit for me to do something with the music that I had. I recorded all these songs and they sat there for 5 years because I was just like, nobody cares. It's the first time where I was like, there's no point in me even trying to do this because it's not going to be as good as what my dad can do, has done, and will do. Because you were
setting your bar to his bar and not your own bar.
Correct. My definition of success in the music industry is 20 plus Grammys. That's what I have to accomplish to even matter.
Yeah.
That's what I have told myself in the past. And that's ridiculous. But I spent a lot of time really believing that. I never got offered a record deal. I never got offered a publishing deal. There's so many things that so many other people have been offered, and still having those things have come out on the other end going, that was a big failure. Nothing ever came of that. The definition of success has been a real struggle for me. And it goes beyond my dad. My dad married Amy Grant. So that's my stepmom. You know, I mean, she might as well be the modern day Jesus living among us, Corrine. You know, that's...
I know I've told you this before,
golly.
But... I think one of the days that I really loved when I spoke to her, you were singing with me and we were singing at 12th and Porter, and she came to see us, and she came up to me at the end of the show and she was like, I love that song. And I was like, oh, that's awesome. I gotta tell you, this is a full circle moment for me. And she was like, really? Why? And I said, when I was 7 years old, my mom and I got in the car And my mom did not know how to drive to the Forum. We lived in the mountains. Forum in LA is 2 hours away. My mom was like, I don't know which road to take, but you know what? That car in front of us has a fish on the back. We're going to follow it. I swear to God.
And it led
my right hand. That's how we got there.
It's amazing.
We followed this fish car the whole way to the concert. It was Amy. And it was her unguarded tour. And I remember seeing Gary. She was married to Gary at the time. Mm-hmm. His last name was Chapman. My last name was Chapman. I was like, Mom,
this is so meant to be.
Are we related? You know? And it was my first concert, my first like real concert.
Amy was your first concert?
Yeah, at 7. And I was standing, we were standing on the floor. So I had to stand on my chair because I couldn't see, you know, and everybody around me was like, oh no, stand on the chair. And that day that she came to see us, I told her that and she goes, what tour was it? And I said, it was your Unguarded tour. She said, I wrote about that day at the Forum for my book at the Unguarded tour today. I was like, oh, and it was a moment that just, it didn't even mean anything really in the grand scheme of things. But I thought, yeah, we're all where we're supposed to be at weird times. And I'm supposed to be here today having this conversation because she had that today. Anyway, it was a cool moment that I share with you and where I too was like, what is this music business? I'm never going to have 20 Grammys. I'm not, you know, whatever it is.
No.
I can't get this. But you, cool. I got to connect with somebody I loved. And that was more important to me that day than the music. And that was when I was like, okay, there's something more to life than this music right here. It is still about connection and feeling that, not feeling I had the best show ever. That was okay because I had a moment and that made it worth it.
That's so cool. I just, you know, talking about connection, and I fully believe that we land in certain places so that we can connect with the souls I think we're supposed to walk through life with. And my first, you know this, but the first job interview that I had after graduating college was with the publishing company that you were already signed to. And you may think I'm blowing smoke. It was your music that made me go, I can work here because I'm intrigued by this girl. I'm intrigued by these songs. I would be happy hearing more from her and like working with this collection of music that I've heard. Like that's,
I did get chills again.
That's what made me want to work for that company.
And these are the moments I love so much, because every day in the music industry, you think, I mean, you're just throwing stuff at the wall sometimes. I don't know. I'm just throwing words out there. And sometimes you walk out so excited about this thing you just created, because every day you're creating something and you're throwing everything from inside at this. This is experiences I've had. These are things I've seen. This is, I don't know. I like the way this sounds. But in the end, it's up to somebody else whether they like it or not. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard. But knowing when you're in a space like that, that you have people who want you to succeed, they're cheering for you. Mm-hmm. I remember when you came on, I was excited because I thought, that's interesting, of all people that would come in here and, you know, be a song plugger for this company, like that, the connection with who I am or where I've been, this is cool. And then of course you started singing with me, and
the fact that you even hired me was so validating. That was cool. You know, okay, here's somebody who I already respect because she's making cool music, you know, and I knew I liked singing ever since I was a kid. I didn't know if I'm crossing a boundary because I'm working for this publishing company as a plugger. Is this actually going to be frowned upon if this
writer... Do you know when that happened? Do you remember the story?
No.
I remember the exact moment.
I don't remember anything ever.
I know, you never remember anything.
Is the worst.
I can tell you, we were on our way to 3rd and Lindsay. I don't know who we were going to see, but Sarah Majors was in the car with
us.
Yeah. You, me, and maybe Deanna.
Okay.
Somebody else.
Okay.
But it was the four of us. And my background singer was moving back to Minnesota.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, Oh, I'm so bummed. My background singer, who I still adore to this day.
Y'all
I
mean,
she's
close.
And she's still really doing some great music. She's doing a bunch of stuff up in Minneapolis, and it's really cool to watch. But I was like devastated. My heart was devastated that she was leaving, because there's, you know, when you're on stage, you have a connection with somebody and there's a feeling you have. Maybe that's that feeling that I was looking for, that I love something. I loved her, mm-hmm. you know, and I was like, oh, she's leaving. She's moving back, but it's okay. And you're like, I'll sing with you. And Sarah Major goes, yep, that sounds like a great idea. It's like,
nice.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. You should sing with me. You're like, really? And I said, yeah, we have rehearsal next week. And you're like, okay, what time? I mean, it was this really fun thing. But I guess all of this to say, we've gone all over the place, but what I'm realizing the most in this conversation, because you and I spend time together, but we're always ridiculous when we spend a lot of time together, because we're laughing and we're with all of our friends. We call our friends pack.
The wolf pack.
And so we're always doing stupid stuff. Like, we're filming 1 minute movies. We're laughing and we're running around and sleeping and eating.
We're just, our friend group is such a safe, wonderful space to just like really be our raw.
Everything we want to be in that moment.
We can vent. We can show up in that group and be whatever we need to be.
Yeah.
And
but I think what this conversation is make me fully realize is that from the first moment we came into each other's lives, we made each other feel seen in a way we'd never felt. And I really love that.
Oh,
I really love that I get to share that with you, and that we're still here however many years later.
18.
Oh, I just threw up a little bit.
18 years. Oh. I worked before I came over here. I was working it out. I was like, I think I got
18 years.
I think I got that job in 06. I think I started working there in 06.
I mean, it was before we were married. It was children.
Oh,
it was before. I mean, we were like so young.
Yeah.
And just, we've been through so much life together. And I think that's beautiful.
So cool. It's so cool. You were an inspiration for sure. And, you know, when you put it that way, like we made each other feel seen. Absolutely. I didn't ever feel this is hard to explain. There's an energy. It's a feeling and this just comes from experience, but when people interact with me, I can tell now what they're really interested in. Mm. You know, is this a fan who's just grateful? You know, you can tell in an instant by what they talk to me about.
Yeah.
And that was that first job, that publishing company. I never felt there was one person, it doesn't matter, but everybody I worked with day to day, you included, I never felt like that you're would ever try to bypass me to get to my dad. I really felt, oh, yeah. They enjoy me. They're inviting me. I felt welcomed to show up as myself. I mean, you and Debbie and Sarah and Deanna, all of them.
I remember the first time I met your dad, I didn't. Of course, I walked over right as soon as we were done, because you walked off the stage and walked to him. And I walked over and it was more of a, I need to meet him because his daughter is Jenny. You know, it was like a, yes, is he a legend? Absolutely. And did I want to say hi? Sure. But it was, I felt like, oh, he came to our show. I'm obligated to go say hello.
Because he's my dad, not because I'm his daughter.
Yes, because he's your dad, and I would go to anybody's dad. Oh my gosh, thank you for having your daughter. You know, thank you for lending her to us, and thank you for raising her. You know, it's like that emotion and it was a dad.
Yeah.
Weird that it was Vince Gill, but it was your dad.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's go back a little bit though.
Okay.
Because there is a moment that I do want you to talk about, because I do think it's very pivotal in your life. Mm. And that is the moment that you found out your parents were going to get a divorce.
Ooh, we're going deep into the crevices.
And the reason I want to bring that up is because I think that moment for you, as you talk about it through the years, really says a lot about how you dealt with it and how you felt about it.
Yeah.
And how you found out about it.
Yeah. I think that's,
I'm just,
that's the
moving all around over here.
No, that's fine. My parents were married for 17 years. Obviously, there's going to be some strain there because, you know, time apart, that alone makes a marriage difficult. I had no idea that there was an issue. You know, I heard my parents fight occasionally, but it wasn't this like really toxic environment in my house. I thought everything was peachy. And one day I go to school, it's a normal day, and I get there and I'm greeted by my best friend at the time, Lauren, and she has this weird look on her face. And I'm like, hey, hey. I was like, what's up? She's, are you okay? And I was like, yeah, I'm fine. You're not okay. Why are you being weird? She said, hey, come with me for a second. I was like, okay. And we went down a hallway and into a teacher's room. And the teacher's desk had the Tennessean, our newspaper, on the corner of his desk. And it was on the front page. You know, my parents were getting divorced. And that's how I found out that my parents were splitting up, on the front page of the newspaper. And it's like one of those like time stopped kind of moments. I feel my body at this moment getting a little like worked up. It was odd. It was really odd. And I think I just kind of bodily went through the motions for the first several classes. And then at some point I'm sitting in class and the intercom comes on. Principal needs to see me. And everybody looks at me and everybody knows why, you know? And it's just, oh, I just wanted to disappear. And I went to the office and my mom was there with her sister, Christine. And we were in, you know, I don't remember whose office, but they gave us this space and we just cried. And I remember my mom being worried about media. She's like, she was afraid like a news person was going to show up at the school or something. That didn't happen. But I don't remember, you know, the next several days following. It just, everything just was different. Everything
was
just.
How did you feel about your mom and your dad in that moment? Specifically related to you, not their relationship with one another, but your relationship with them and having to find out from someone other than them.
I don't think it really, I don't know if it dawned on me to even think about that. It's just kind of like everything was different. And every day just felt foreign. Everything felt foreign. You know, we had to move. I decided to go with mom when we moved out, and I think everyone just kind of checked out. Dad had something to focus on. And for dad, it's a classic, you know, my career is at the height, but my personal life is going to shit. I mean, his divorce with my mom was the same year that his father passed away. And so he was really struggling. But had to show up happy, and he had to put that mask on. My mom, I remember she just checked out. She emotionally just checked out, and I checked out. Mm-hmm. I kind of wanted to be separated from both of them.
Right.
I didn't turn to her. I didn't turn to him. I turned to my boyfriend at the time. And that's just kind of who I hung out with. And it was the only place that felt familiar. And my God, I could have gotten in a lot of trouble, but for some reason I didn't. I could have ended up in jail, Kareem. I could have ended up pregnant, mm-hmm. you know, at 16. Godly. But I didn't.
But you didn't.
but I didn't. And, you know, that boy that I was dating, you know, it didn't last very long. We were so young. We didn't know how to really take care of each other, you know. But my mom then got in a, shortly after the divorce, she got in a horse accident and broke her wrist and broke an ankle, just doing what she can to get through each day.
Yeah.
You know, and I had a place to go, and she was very lenient with mm-hmm. things because.
And did you take that as, oh, cool, great, I can do whatever I want to do? Or yes. Did you take it more as?
I took advantage. You know, I totally took advantage. I wasn't trying to take advantage. It was just like, this is what's been presented to me. You know, she's not going to get worked up if I'm out super late, you know, didn't really have a curfew. I could just kind of show up whenever.
Yeah.
And I don't blame her for that.
No, you and your mom actually have a really good relationship.
We have a very good relationship. Yeah. But when I finally found myself in therapy, because I was noticing how I was really down. I didn't care about anything. I wasn't motivated to do anything. Shower. I was gaining weight. I just didn't care about life. And I started seeing a therapist because my boyfriend at the time, we're married now, Josh and I were just starting to date each other. He was like, I'm crazy about you, but this isn't working. And I think it would be beneficial if you talk to somebody. And so I did. And this was years later. I mean, I'm out of college at this point. And I started seeing a therapist. And she started talking to me about my parents' divorce. Now tell me about that. And I was like, I told her and I was like, but it's okay. I've dealt with it. And she said, oh no, you haven't.
But have you?
I was like, but I have. She's like, and she was the first one who made me realize that this was a big puzzle piece into my self-worth, my lack of self-worth. I was told through the message that I heard from my parents was I wasn't important enough to be told this information. And they, of course, didn't plan it out that way. My dad was actually betrayed by somebody who he confided in about the divorce, and they ran their mouths to the media. And there's no way my parents could have anticipated that the day after the filing, it was going to show up
right
on the front page, you know? And I know if they could turn back and do it differently, they would.
The funny thing is they probably talked about it, like, how are we going to tell her? But you'll never know.
If they did, there's so much I still don't know about what went down.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, that's okay.
Yeah.
If anything, it'll make me be more aware of how I show up to my kids.
Sure.
And to their needs. I, for example, had my dream job touring with Amy as a background singer. I mean, all those dreams of I'm going to be a star, I'm going to be a singer, I'm going to be in the spotlight. No, it's actually the background singer gig for me. That's the dream.
Because you have no responsibility. You go out there and
job.
Do your fun.
You just do the show. I don't have to do a radio tour. I don't have to do interviews. I don't have to do the meet and greets. I don't have the weight on my shoulders to provide jobs for all these people. Mm-hmm. Be interesting. I just show up and sing my parts and drink a beer on the bus and sleep in till 1 p.m. if I want. It's the best job ever. And
speaking of that, I just saw your Instagram where you were talking about yourself. We're like, you've got this face on and you're like getting down and you're like, what song am I singing? That's a Christmas show. Yeah.
Yeah.
That made me laugh.
Performing is so much fun. I love the routine of the road, everything about it. And I had the best gig on planet Earth. And then I started a family. And it just was getting really hard to be away from home. And the pandemic happened. And we had all this time together. And then when touring came back and it says, all right, we're doing a West Coast run for 3 weeks. We're going to be gone for 3 weeks. And that's when I said, I think it's time for me to move on from this gig. It's a really hard decision. But I remembered how awful it was when both of my parents were gone. My mom was gone. And so it was made a really easy decision to choose my kids and the time with them that I'll never get back. It's the best choice. Ugh. And I just, so many nights of cuddling them to sleep. And I'm going to be so glad when I look back that I did that, even if it meant I had to sacrifice something I loved to do. It's easy. This is way more.
The really cool part about it, though, is that you gave up the year of it, but you get a little taste of it every year.
I do.
When you do your Christmas shows.
I do those Christmas shows,
because you get to get out there and you're such a goofball and you get to see the band and, you know, you get to bring your kids on stage and it's a family affair, which I think is even cooler.
It definitely scratches that itch of wanting to be on a stage and perform. And I do. I give it my all. I don't care that they're Christmas classics. I will twerk a little bit if I'm inspired to do it. I don't care. It's so cool. Like, the older I get, you've heard it so many times from older people. Like, the older I get, the less I care. It's so true.
Yeah, because you're getting it from within now, and you're not getting it from somebody else telling you that you're cool or clapping for you. You're like, I love this.
Yeah,
I'm doing it. And when you do it authentically, you bring other people the same joy. And that's really the best part.
Yeah, it's really cool that I get to have those experiences with my family. It's Dad and Amy and my road family.
So I think that's actually where, and you could tell me if I'm wrong, but I think that's where you started to find your next love.
Mm.
Because you were on the road with Amy and you were doing these like little videos. First, your dad got you for Christmas that flip cam.
Was that a present from Dad? How do you remember that?
Because you were like, I don't know, I got this thing. But because you took it everywhere with us.
That flip camera. That was the beginning, Corrine.
Mardi Gras. I mean, all these things that you would take.
That's right.
You took the flip. I can't even go into some of these stories, but one of my favorite stories, though, is that flip cam. We Were on the Street is one of my favorite ones, but had you not had that flip cam, I would never have known the depths of your love for my husband. When
I do love
in the
Dylan.
Middle of the night, we're all back at the hotel, and Dylan overhears a drunk man threaten a pregnant woman.
Yeah, this is after a day of just
and
mayhem.
I'm like, I've got bunny ears on. I'm over by the...
We're done.
By the elevator, and I just look over, and there's a big old scuttle happening.
That's right. You weren't even there. Your husband overheard somebody threaten somebody.
A pregnant lady.
A very violent threat. And there was a pregnant woman right there. And he just stepped in there and somebody threw a punch and
Dylan took him to the ground.
Dylan took him down.
And his foam sword is...
He's wearing the sword made out of foam, like in his belt.
And his beads break. I mean,
we look
ridiculous.
It's
really funny. And you guys are all fawning over him. And I mean, thank goodness I saw the video.
Thank goodness I had that flip cam.
I know.
On record. The whole time, I was
ABR.
And then the aftermath, hotel security comes and they take that douchebag away. And so everyone's just, what just happened? And so we're walking back to the hotel, and then all the women in the group, there was this sudden, were fawning over him.
Dylan,
oh my gosh. It was like he turned into this superhero and... Oh, my Lord. He showed his character that day. And yeah, from that day on, I think we all.
But you had that camera with you everywhere.
I did.
You took it everywhere and you were always filming stuff, which was, I am so thankful for that. You were like the mother or the father who had that camera. Like, you got all of these videos of our home videos. You know, you have a lot of them.
I don't know where that came from. It's something I realize I always did. Even as a kid, I'd had these two girlfriends that would come over to my house all the time, Lauren being one of them. The other gal's name is Caroline. And I would have whatever camcorder is available at that time. And we would make little movies. I would direct them around. I was always filming stuff. And that flip cam I came about, and it's like, this is fun. I like documenting things and being silly. And just, it's a form of storytelling that lights me up in a way that songwriting never did.
Right.
I think songwriting, I was always trying to be impressive. And with filmmaking, it's all about the story.
Yeah.
And I decided, I'm out on the road with Amy Grant. I'm going to make a little YouTube channel. I made a few little videos. If I look back at them now, I'd probably gag. Just the editing, I'll bet, is so terrible.
You gotta start somewhere, though.
You do have to start somewhere. But isn't that interesting with a creative space that felt like my own?
Yes.
And it's something that I didn't feel like my mom and dad did this, so now I'm going to do it too. It felt like a whole new arena.
Yeah. And I do feel like all of your friends too kind of jumped on. Yeah, let's do it. I mean, you would always, the women movies started because of you. You were like, we were in Gatlinburg and we were going to the Titanic Museum the next day. And for some reason, we just started filming all of the scenes from Titanic. And then by the end of the weekend,
you had a
video, a whole little video
edited.
It is probably our best one still.
It will be the best one.
Because it was just...
It wasn't planned. It happened. That was the activity we decided.
Characters changed the whole time.
God, it was so much fun.
But it was that moment. I remember... poor Carrie, I think. Carrie was sick that night, right?
That weekend, yeah.
But I remember standing there. You're standing on top of the table, filming somebody laying on the table and falling to the ground. And I mean, we're all just, I mean, laughing so hard. There was a good 5 minutes where none of us said a word and none of us could breathe. And that was the moment, though, for me, when I looked at you and said, she has found her thing. Because you were, even though we were all laughing, as soon as we got ourselves together, you were like, get into position.
I went into director mode a little bit.
I had a vision. It was great.
I had a vision.
But that was, we were so encouraging to you to do this thing because you really had a passion for it. And you've really taken, so tell us a little bit more about what you're doing now.
Man, I got really in, so... I did a lot of studying on YouTube when we were all stuck at home there for a couple of years. I did a lot of studying about
the forgotten years.
Yeah. Cameras and lighting techniques. And I was convinced, like, this is what I am meant to do. I started an LLC and started taking on any kind of videography gig I could get my hands on. First legit project, I don't know if it's legit, but the first like big deal project was a independent artist who was going to let me do a music video. And I took her out to Amy's farm and we filmed some scenes up in the loft of the barn. I brought an inflatable mattress and made it look like a bed on this hardwood floor. And, you know, she was kind of a sensual type of a performer. So I tried really hard. Yeah, she was on these bed sheets. And I just didn't know at all what I was doing. So I just shot as much as I possibly could. It was cold and I drug her out in the woods and this weird outfit she had on. She was freezing. Go, okay, do this, stand here. And I would like circle around her and okay, run, you know, and made her run down this field. And, you know, and that was my first music video. And then I got another music video gig and it just started to happen. And I got really excited. Then I started doing corporate work where the flip cam, the love of the flip cam and kind of documentary style. I really like that. That's that storytelling element that there's something about taking a long interview and cutting out the gems of it and putting it back together in a way that makes sense. The challenge of that, that just lights me up. And I got so into it that I kind of stopped looking after my house. Like, laundry was not getting done. Nothing was getting done. And I'm currently on my ADHD assessment journey and, you know, hoping to be able to manage my boring tasks better so that I can still make the space for the exciting creative stuff I still want to do. But balancing it has been really hard. I find myself currently not in a rut, but in this feeling that I'm starting this new thing too late. You know, like, I've lost all these years not being a filmmaker since I was 25. I'm starting at 4.
But what does that mean? Why does that feel, just because you don't feel like you can have a long career in it? Or what is it about being a latecomer?
That's a skill level. I want to be, okay. I want to be better at, I want to be better. I want to be, what I want to be is perfect. And I know that's not even a thing, but that's something that's, if I execute anything, I want it to be perfect. And y'all know this about me. Y'all mm-hmm. play those funny pranks on me, make a beautiful platter of cookies and hosting everybody. And you guys pretend like you ate all the cookies first. And it's not supposed to be this way. You bitches.
Oh, you're welcome.
You got me so good. And I don't know why I approach things like that. I just want it to be perfect. I want to be the best. I want to be the best.
So that is when that is definitely something that I, through this journey, have tried to sit in. And that is that it is not, you know, it's actually, I'm going to go back a little bit because I think I recognized this a long time ago. And I don't think I've thought about this for, I don't know how many years, but before we ever met, I had a writing, you know, back in the day when you didn't write on your computers and you wrote stuff with your hand and a pen.
On, yeah.
Stuff with lines.
Like in a journal.
Yeah. But I had journals that were my writing journals. I still have them. There's something cathartic to me about putting your brain to the physicality of doing that. Mm-hmm. But I would always put a phrase on there, or I would do like the weird thing where I'd cut out all letters from magazines and stuff because I didn't ever read magazines really, but I would cut out the letters and make a phrase. Leap in the net will appear. That was one of them.
Huh.
There was another one that it's not the destination, it's the journey. So
it's
I had all these things.
The climb. I'm sorry. I'm sorry about that.
It's okay. I was just explaining to my children yesterday that I hear things in song, and my daughter, because I do that many times, I sing back to her and I said, yes, I sing a lot of things. I always sing it. She goes, no, you didn't just now. You just said that to me. I'm like, oh my gosh, shut up.
I love that leap and the net will appear.
Yeah. So I had these long time ago, right?
Yeah.
But it is that. I get hyper-focused on that perfection, that end journey. Mm-hmm. This podcast is perfection in that knowledge of notion. And that is that it is the journey. It is the process mm-hmm. where we can find that. Mm-hmm. It's not the end. Mm-mm. It's not the final destination. It's not your final project. It's not the final product.
It's not the accolade.
No, it's the process that you do that you love that brings you to what that feeling is that you get. The product is just the end of the culmination of all of those feelings that you have. Sometimes you'll capture it perfectly. I put that in quotes. And sometimes you'll capture something that you don't even know what it means yet because you put your heart in it. But
I need to remember that. I need to tell myself that more often. For
me
sure.
Too.
My gosh. I wish the end result wasn't so important. I don't even know what the end result is supposed to be.
But that end result for you potentially came a long time ago when that award came for your father or your mother or didn't come for your mother. And you want that recognition that someone else thinks it's awesome. When in reality, it's that process of you doing it that makes it awesome.
Yeah. I would love to get to a place where my own praise, my own feeling, I like this. I really love this, regardless of what everybody else says about it. I love it. Then that's what matters. I would love to get there one day where I'm not so worried about everyone else's praise. Is this good? Is this good enough?
Do that.
Do you like it?
You do it already. Do you know how you do it already?
No.
So you throw out these little reels on Instagram every day that are so imperfect.
I do.
You're just talking and you think it's hilarious.
I do. I think I'm hysterical. I do. I think I get into weird situations and the way I carry myself through a weird situation. I don't know.
But the great part about that is you put it out there and you can't think about it because it's like, here I am just talking to this camera right here. And this is what I'm doing. You know, I mean, you're so silly and you just talk to it and then you hit send and you're like, it's out there.
There it is.
So you do it.
I guess I do. That doesn't scare me for some reason. God, I think we just need more reality on social media. I think a lot of people feel this way. And I think you see it a lot more nowadays. You know, there's the funny mom accounts. And Elise Myers, you know, is a great example of just showing up as you are and being your own weird, quirky self. And because it is interesting.
Yeah.
And I will admit, I get instant gratification. The people who follow me, I've maybe gotten one, maybe two weird kind of negative comments. Like 99% of the time, it's not so much anymore like you're so funny. It's you brighten my day.
Yeah.
That's what makes me keep showing up. I really needed this today. Thank you for the laughs. I think I'm helping people. It might be for a moment, might be a micro dose of medicine, but that's just something never even dawned on me that I would be capable of, because everything's up to this point has been music. How good of a singer can I be? Filmmaking.
Almost perfect.
How good of a
your,
stop.
But it really, your pitch. You know, everything is very good. You come from a long line of greatness.
Thank you.
But you don't acknowledge it yourself.
I don't. I don't believe it. I really don't. Maybe I'll get there one day where I have more confidence in my voice, what I have to say. But the dream is shifting, you know, definitely towards what would I come up with in a comedic space. I don't know if that's sketch writing. I don't know if that's stand up. I don't know. I've been taking improv classes.
I was just going to ask you about your improv. Have you started it?
Yes. I've taken two classes. And you know what? I got in there the first class thinking, okay, maybe this will help me be wittier in the moment, right? Maybe this will help me think of jokes quicker. 20 minutes into that first class, I went, oh, this is straight up therapy is what this is. This is therapy. The idea of you can't plan ahead. Don't plan ahead. If you start planning ahead and trying to be clever and trying to be funny, you've
missed the mark.
You've stopped listening to what the other person is saying. You have to trust yourself that you have everything you need in here to react in the moment.
I don't know if I could do it.
Yes, you can. You have everything you need, all your life experience, all the vocabulary, you know, all your education, all your experiences. You have everything you need to show up in a moment And so this notion of doing something in a perfect way or executing it in a certain way, improv is going to help me to start dismantling that,
mm-hmm.
I think, and just trusting what's up there. And these little games, they're so much fun, but it's helped me listen. I got to shut this off so I can really listen, because you don't just try to be funny. Like, you accept these statements as gifts. Mm-hmm. Somebody's just giving you a gift. What are you going to do with that?
I love that. I think that's what I like about this space as well. I'm not performing. And I think that, as you know, I have a hard time saying no. When somebody asks me if I can do something or if I can help with something, and I can, and the only reason I would say no is because I don't want to, I feel guilty, right?
Would you classify yourself as a people pleaser?
Yeah. Which is weird, because I also don't really care in the end what people think about it.
Okay.
But I do in the moment. It's a weird, I catch myself. That's probably that, you know, 3 on the Enneagram or whatever. You can talk about all these different personalities of that, you know, achiever.
Is that what a number three?
Yes, an achiever.
Okay.
But I can take 18 different tests and I will try to answer them how I think, oh, I'm going to try to trick this. Every time I get the same type of personality, I'm like, you're an idiot. Don't even try. Anyway, what was I saying? Because that was totally off the mark. But, oh, that I love this space, because I do need to fill my time somehow. People ask me. I was just saying to my college roommate today, I sometimes have found myself recently getting a little bit angry or irritated with somebody who knows that I can't say no, or knows that I don't have the time to do something, yet they mention it to me that they have a problem and they know that I can help them. And then I'm like, why would you ask me then if you know that I don't have time? Mm. Because I find myself being like, now I'm mad because they know I can't say no and I have to help that person. So it's interesting. But in this space, no, I don't really have the time to have a podcast, right? I've got a business. I'm coaching. I've got 2 kids. But it's for me. It is a time for me to sit here and connect with somebody and listen to their story about how they got through whatever it is that they're dealing with in their life or that they've dealt with. And I like that. I need to hear, I need to create space for myself to listen. So I just made it a job.
So cool. You're doing a lot. You're doing, I want to say too much. Like, for me, that I think it's too much, because to put myself in your shoes, I would just go, there is no possible way I could manage all that simultaneously. It's really impressive. It's really cool that you just, I don't know, you believe in yourself enough to be like, I think this would be fun. I feel capable that I can do this. And I'm just going to do it regardless of how, you know, how it turns out.
It's either going to be good or it's not, and I don't care.
But you're having fun, and you're connecting with people that you want to connect with and doing it in a cool way. And just, my hat's off to you.
Thank you.
That's makes me want to start a podcast, Colleen.
We're going to start something with a video, and that's what you're going to do. And it's going to be great. And
I have ideas. Maybe.
One other thing that I was going to say that I loved, and I'm going to take it back to your parents for just a second, because I want to know if you, what your thoughts are for your children. You and your husband have done, you're fine. You guys make good money and you live in your childhood home.
I do.
But I love, you had to buy that from your dad.
We did.
You had to buy it from him. He did not give it to you. You had to buy your first house. You had to pay off your first house. You had to buy your first, you got a car, but then you got an upgrade after you took care of that car. It's like, you did not have, your parents could have given you whatever you wanted. You were an only child, but they also made it so that you had to work for it. And I remember you saying, you were stuck in a moment during that time because you were like, they could do this. Why wouldn't, like, why are they not just giving this to me? They've, you know, I went through all this as a kid and they could just give it to me. But also you appreciated it. You learned so much through that.
Yeah, I think it's a good, mix. You know, we were, we got to a point where we became comfortable financially. I felt like we were in the middle. We were in a nice neighborhood, but we were not gated in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my parents wanted me to go to private school. I begged them to let me go to public school. I didn't want to remake. I didn't want to lose the two friends that I had and not be able to make new friends. And they let me stay in public school. I think the biggest years of growing for me was when I accepted a job waiting tables at Logan's Roadhouse. And that's the most normal I had ever felt up to that point. I was like, I want to feel normal. I had friends who worked at that restaurant. I had just dropped out of Belmont because just was not ready to be at college, or the fact that I was at a college that I thought my dad really wanted me to mm-hmm. go to. Anyway, after that job waiting tables, it really changed my perspective on so many things. How to treat people.
I always say that people should be in some kind of customer service position.
I think, and for somebody with my type of upbringing where you are thrown into an environment where everybody caters to you, everybody says yes to you, everything you do is just kind of easy. I want to do this. Okay. Make this happen for you. You know, like the celebrity treatment mm-hmm. I got to experience a lot as a kid. And I think over time, had that just been my normal, I would have naturally stayed a spoiled brat. Now, and you can't know that you're acting like one until you put yourself in a position of serving others.
Yeah.
And everything kind of changed after that. I was like, okay, once I realized a record deal was not going to fall out of the sky into my lap while I'm sweeping up peanut shells, maybe I should try college again. And yeah. I went to MTSU and I graduated. I did it. I was under the radar. Nobody knew who I was. Nobody recognized me. Nobody was like behind my back. I felt like everybody else. And yeah, I was talking to my mom earlier today. She said, I think considering all the things we experienced, I think you turned out pretty good.
I think so. And is that the same hope that you have for your children? I mean, do you think that your children feel the celebrity in the same way? I mean, I know certainly not in the same way because they don't live in that every day, but it is still there because your parents are still famous.
I think they'll figure it out one day when they're a little older. You know, I think they'll start to understand kind of the legacy that Dad and Amy and their dad are going to leave. You know, my husband is a real big power player in the yeah. music industry right now. On the business side, exactly. He's a top executive at Sony Music Publishing, and he's, I think, been responsible or, you know, I don't know, 70 number one songs or something crazy. I mean,
I love about him is he started in the tape room. He's like that real story, that old story. Like, he truly did start in the tape room.
He did. He was
kids would be like, what's a tape?
He was shoveling horse manure on a horse farm before he got that job in the tape room. I mean, it is the starting from the bottom and working his ass off. And that's really what I want my kids to recognize is like the work that was put in.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what I missed is everything just was happening. I didn't see my parents struggling. I was too young to remember that phase.
Right.
Everything was just working.
Before they had record deals.
Fame was just a thing. Everyone treated us a little different. It was just like, oh, this is my existence. I didn't see the tears you know, and the sweat that they put in to get there.
Yeah.
But my kids, I think, will see that and how hard their dad works. And I want them to see, you know, me do something that I enjoy. And I think the celebrity thing over time, I don't know if it'll wear off, but Dad and Amy are in different places in their careers now. And I think they'll recognize the part they played, but I don't think they'll be as affected by...
Overshadowed, as we'll say.
Overshadowed, Corrine. You writer. You're such a poet. I don't know. I get, you know, I don't know. We'll see.
You're kind of the cool... You are, interestingly, though, if I look at your parents, your husband, and you, yeah, your husband's around artists and things like that, but he's not the person on the stage, except at award shows and things like that. But you're the Instagram star. You know, I mean, you know what I mean? Like, to the kids, oh, you're actually the cool, you are in their, you're in their...
I guess I'd never thought about it that way.
I didn't either until just now.
Maybe. Who knows? I have a small little fun following, and who knows if it'll grow. It's just going to take one viral video, you know, and it could be a thing. But I want them to find something that they enjoy, something that fulfills them, you know, find something that makes them want to show up and keep at it, you know?
And makes them uniquely them. I think that was one thing that you said recently about your sister. So your sister actually has also gone into music. Corrine.
She's a freak of nature.
And she's so good.
She's so good.
But I do remember you being like, you know, she was like, oh, I don't know, maybe I'll do some country. And you're like, why? Do, you know, and I love that you can, that she does have a perspective of that for you. You had said, I did that. Go do you. And I hope that she hears that from you.
I hope so, too. I think she has the ability to be unstoppable. I mean, that's how good her voice is.
It's very effortless.
It is. She's been singing since she was a kid. Annoyingly, we'd be sitting around dinner or whatever, and she's just... And we're just like, Corrina, shut up. Golly. But man, now I get it.
Yeah.
You know, and... She's mentioned it before. Oh, maybe I should just do the country thing. Just get your foot in the door. And I'm like, if it were me, I think it'd be way cooler to just fall in love with your music the way you want it to be now. And the fact that dad is your dad is just a fun little side note. Oh, that's interesting. Now I'm ready to see what she's going to do next.
Yeah.
You know, if you approach it with, this is my identity.
Yeah. But it's hard. It's so hard. As you know, it is just hard to do that in the wake of following in somebody's footsteps. One, you adore the people in front of you. It would be an honor to follow their steps. They could potentially open doors for you, but all at the same time, to be authentically you is, it's very hard to do at a younger age. It's hard to do now as you move through, you know?
She's doing a good job. She's going to figure it out. She just joined a cover band. She's got her first gig coming up, and in this cover band, you know, some fundraiser. She's going to find her way.
That's fun.
It's really cool. If I can help her along the way, great, you know, but she'll figure it out. She's a smart girl. We all end up, I think, where we're supposed to be.
Yeah. If we continue to listen. That's the hardest thing. You don't have to listen to somebody's negativity or have that pull you down, but to listen to yourself, to listen to what is guiding you. We have something within us, you know, and we do have people surrounding us that we do put around us that love us, that want us to succeed in the things that we do. And they're pushing for those good things. I have two little spots in the end of my shows each time.
Tell me. Wait, first of all, I have a question.
Oh, yeah.
Don't lose your thought. Like, was I good enough, Corrine? everything that I said, was it good enough? Was I on? Because I feel like
we'll
just chat
that later. Just kidding. we'll assess a little later.
Do we need to come back and do a redo?
No, this is exactly what I want. I want a real conversation with somebody, because you did talk about the things that made you feel that way, that you weren't enough or And that's what we're doing. We're just talking.
Just already, I'm being so critical of myself.
I know.
Why do I do that?
This is a perfect spot, though. Mm-hmm. The first thing I want to ask you is, what is one time, it can be in the last 24 hours or in the last 7 days, what is the time you felt like you were not good enough besides 2 seconds ago?
It's the only thing I can think of, but it's you know, what I'm presently going through. I recently lost my temper. I was filled with a lot of anger, and I wish I would have shown up differently on that day. That's just, it's really hard to acknowledge when you've like really messed up, you know, but I think that's a part of growing and being accountable and just recognizing, yeah, that was me.
And that is the beautiful part of friendship, because if it were the two of us, I would also, whether I was hurt or not, I would have to accept that you did have a reaction and that it can be worked through.
And yeah, that was a deep one to answer that question with.
That's okay, though, because it is...
It's real life,
it's
man.
It's real, and we feel it every day. I would say mine is really silly, but you actually mentioned it before about yourself in a way. I just got home the other day, and we had done a lot of laundry, like 4 loads of laundry. And then when we were folding the one load, we did another load, and mm-hmm. It was like, okay, we did all the laundry. And I would get up in the morning, and I would fold, like, for 10 minutes. And then I would leave, and then I would come back, and the stuff is still there. And mm-hmm. then I would fold again, and I would leave. And after a while, I won't say how many days, mm-hmm. but I came in and I was like, my God, you need to fold these clothes. So I took some time that morning and I folded, but then I had to take the kids to school. And when I got home, my husband had folded the rest. And then I just felt...
Did that make you feel guilty?
Yes. Mm-hmm. It made me feel like, dang it. I was trying to do... I should have just done it. But I kept kind of putting it off. I mean, who loves to fold laundry? But I just kept putting it off. And then he did it. And I just felt, man, that was... I could have done that. And I should have done that. But again, that word is a very inflammatory word for me.
Should have.
Yeah. And I really try not to use it. But I did that day to myself. Dang it. But he didn't say anything. He was like, oh, I finished it. Yeah, cool. And he put his stuff away. And I put my stuff away. And it was fine. And it moved on. But for that moment, I really got mad at myself.
That's a daily one for me.
Yeah.
I really struggle, Corrine, with the house chores. It's the most boring, mundane. It's so boring. There's no reward. There's no praise. I mean, Josh will sometimes be
I love the way it feels when my house is clean.
Yeah, but there's no praise. There's no prize. Yeah. There's no, it's just, guess what? You get to do it all over again
tomorrow.
The next day. It never ends. And I feel you on that. I get to dinner time without a plan. And it's when I give my kids chicken nuggets where I tell that to myself. This isn't good enough. I can do better than this.
Yeah. But sometimes they really love it. You know, they're like, yes, chicken nuggets and mac and cheese.
Yeah. Yeah, some days are easier to be like, you know what? This is the best I have today.
Yeah.
You know, there's food on the food is food.
There's food on the table.
You know, and I ate the same thing every night when I was a kid. It's what I'm used to. And some days are easier to be like, you know what? This is what it is today.
Yeah.
And that's okay. I know it's okay.
Okay, the other last thing that I do mm-hmm. is called a glimmer. Ooh. So tell me, what was your glimmer of the week?
My glimmer of the week. What did I do this week? This is really hard for somebody who has a problem with their memory.
Oh, I should have prepped you with this one and said, hey, when you see something really cool that you love that just gives you excitement and makes you flutter, write it down.
Okay, I got it. It was a post I made on my Instagram account. And I feel like in the last several years have become really comfortable with laughing at myself. And a whole childhood and young adulthood so worried about what others are going to think of me, or like doing something embarrassing or somebody laughing at me. Now I want people to laugh at me, right? And on Easter Sunday, I introduced myself to my own cousin because I didn't recognize him as a man. He used to be a child, and that's the version of him I know.
Yeah.
But then he grew up overnight and is 20 out of nowhere. And I straight up went up to him and introduced myself to him as if we hadn't seen each other 18 times already. I mean, granted, this is Amy's family. This is not a family that I grew up in. I was accepted into this family when I was about 17, 18 years old. And Amy's family's enormous. There's too many of them. And I mean, I started telling him how I fit into the family. Well, I'm Vincent, Amy's oldest. And Josh was like, babe, this is Sam. And I was like, oh. And in that moment, the weight, you know, I felt awful, but I was able to laugh about it. And I posted about it on my Instagram the other day, just because that's just funny. And you know how many people are like, oh, that sounds exactly like me. Oh my gosh, I've done that before. You know?
Yeah.
I think the glimmer is it's feeling so comfortable at laughing at myself, at the goofy stuff that I do and the funny stuff that I do. I feel comfortable enough sharing it. And then I understand how relatable it is. And then I just feel like I'm able to make people feel better about themselves. You know, we make mistakes all the time. And if we don't laugh about it, then what are we even doing?
Yeah.
You know, just posting embarrassing stories.
Love
I mean,
it.
Have you ever introduced yourself to your own cousin?
Probably not.
It's all right.
We don't have a very big family, though. I mean, really.
He was. He's once removed.
Oh, didn't even get me started on those. Second, once removed, third. I don't know. All those. I have to look it up every time.
I know it.
Oh.
I have. When your first cousin has a child, that child is your
second
your,
cousin.
No. Is your first cousin
once removed.
Once removed.
Got it.
Okay. Your first cousin has a child, your child, and your cousin's child, their second cousins. So it's your offspring and your cousin's
offspring.
Okay,
you told me that, and tomorrow I'm going to forget it.
It's all right. You can call me and ask me again, and I'll explain it to you. But yeah, I only learned those family rules and those terms because of Amy's family.
Ah, very nice.
There's so many of them.
Yeah. Okay, let's see. What was my glimmer? Oh, my glimmer was, so it's, you know, we typically record these ahead of time. So yesterday was the release of this podcast. So that's my glimmer for the week. I remember being so excited that just, I didn't even care really how it did. I don't really even know how many downloads are good. I don't really know the statistic part of it. I just was excited to finally do something I said I was going to do 7 years ago. And that was my glimmer, that no matter how much time goes by, when you say you want to do something, do it. And don't let time be the thing that stops you. So that's my glimmer. I think we are kind of nearing the time that we should probably say goodbye for now.
I think you're doing a great job. I am so proud of you. I'm so proud to be here. Thank you so much.
Thank you for coming and sharing your story. I know you questioned that, whether it was what I wanted. And again, I just want you to know that other people want to know how people deal with life. And your story is your story. And it may be someone else's, but it may not be. But something in that story, maybe another child wasn't told by their parents and found out from somebody else. And maybe that helps. I don't know. But it's your story to tell. And I loved that you told it. But thank you.
Thank you for giving me the place to share it. I mean, I think what we all need to remember, regardless of our circumstances and what you're hearing in the world, but what's true is that we matter.
We do matter.
We matter.
And yeah. matter to ourselves.
Yeah.
Until next time, I don't know. Be well. Go kick your own butt. I don't know. Until next time, we'll see ya. Bye-bye.